What you call that noise?
The XTC Podcast.
XTCLimelight.com. What do you call that noise?
What do you call that noise?
Terry Chambers and EXTC are back on the road and they are sounding fantastic. In this episode of What Do You Call That Noise? The XTC Podcast, we catch up with the band at the start of a tour that will take in more than 20 dates in the USA, from Philadelphia to Virginia, and further gigs and festivals in the UK throughout the summer. Hello again. I'm Mark Fisher, and I'm very pleased to tell you the latest incarnation of EXTC were on top form at the Voodoo Rooms here in Edinburgh at the end of March 2024. And if you don't believe me, you just need to ask David and Paul and Murray and Ivan and Kenny and Callum and everyone else who was there that I met and said hello to. It was a fantastic night. Since Steve Tilling left EXTC citing ill health in October 2022, the band has carried on as a three-piece and now has a new bass player to replace Matt Hughes. Joining drummer Terry Chambers and guitarist Steve Hampton is Terry Lines, who has spent the last two or three decades travelling the world as Paul McCartney in a series of Beatles cover bands. He first played with Steve Hampton in the late 1970s in a band called The Rams, so they go way back, and as we shall hear, it was Terry who turned Steve onto XTC in the first place. They're playing a really interesting set that leans heavily on the direct attack of Black Sea, as well as including such unexpected delights as Reel by Reel from Drums and Wires and Jason and the Argonauts from English Settlement. They are bold and forthright and somehow make you forget there are only three of them. They were also great company crammed into a tiny dressing room to record this podcast, with Terry Chambers having his dinner delivered and Steve and Terry Line having to shuffle off early to get their pre-gig meals, but it all worked out in the end. We'll come to that in just a minute, but first, it wouldn't be an XTC podcast if we didn't hear what sound you, the listeners, have been coming up with. Every episode, we invite you to share a song that you have written that has been inspired in some way by XTC. This time, it's the turn of Felix von Boxberg, who is here to introduce If You Think I Go Right.
What do you call that noise?
Hi, I'm Felix from Germany. I've been a fan of XTC ever since hearing the album Mama, when my dad left it in my CD player. He then played me Prince of Orange, and to this day I'm convinced that it's one of the greatest songs of all time. So when Mark announced the songwriting challenge, I immediately tried to come up with something that related to the podcast, as were the terms of the challenge at that time. What had stuck around in my head was the phrase, "If you think he goes right, he goes left." So I tried writing something related to that. I came up with this bizarre bass line and later moved it back one bar when I played the chords. The rest of it is fairly linear, adding new ideas along its main structure. I then held off on finishing it for many months until finally getting it to a state where I felt I could chip it off. It's not about anything in particular, aside from the attraction to the unusual, where I sympathize very much with XTC. And with that, thank you for having me and enjoy.
It doesn't
it doesn't.
What do you call that noise?
Tremendous. Thanks very much, Felix. You can find more of Felix's songs on Bandcamp under Felix Box. I'll leave a link in the podcast details later on. If you have an XTC-inspired song, feel free to let me know at mark@xtclimelight.com. Although I have to say there is a long waiting list ahead of you, I'm afraid. Three cheers for the brilliant supporters on Patreon who make this podcast happen. They're all very, very wonderful people. And if you like what you hear and you'd like to join them, it's very, very straightforward. You just pop over to patreon.com/Mark Fisher and decide on your level of support. There are three levels. And if you opt to be a knight in shining armor, I'll read out your name at the end of each episode. And the monthly reminder, you can buy your copy of What Do You Call That Noise, an XTC Discovery book at xtclimelight.com, where you'll also find details of all the podcasts, 51 of them, I think, if I'm counting correctly. So now it's time to visit the Voodoo Rooms in Edinburgh, where I joined XTC's original drummer, Terry Chambers, guitarist Steve Hampton, and bass player Terry Lines for a chat before the gig. Now, this gets complicated. Not only are there two Terrys in the band, but Terry Lyne's wife is also called Terry, and she, along with Steve's partner Jax and Terry Chambers' partner Lynn, is out on tour with them. So we started off talking about the confusion of names. Here to kick off the interview is Terry Lyne's.
What do you call that noise?
We did a gig with Hugh Cornwell, and they asked me to get the hotel ready. So I got a Premier Inn app. So there I was, tapping away. I've got it. Right, Mr. Chambers in room one, Mr. Hampton in room two, Mr. Lines in room three. Get to the hotel. These two get their keys, and I go to the desk and go, I've got a room, Mr. Lines. No, there is no room for Mr. Lines. I'm like, oh, you've got to be joking. I'm the one that paid for it. And then they come up, we've got a room here for Mr. Temporary. And he went, and he said, exactly.
And it wasn't a setup or anything. This was actually real.
And he had been telling me for weeks before, you're not going to be in here long.
Nobody stays here very long. I was honest with him from the start. I said, nobody stays. I said, this is the revolver. We should change the thing to the revolving door. You know, not velvet revolver. That's already been done. Revolving door. I said, Hampton's only been there because he's been given the Rohit knob.
And I'd have the advantage as well, if you just called him Mr. Temporary, you wouldn't have to learn the new name all the time. Exactly. Just be the new guy in there.
I don't call him Mr. It just gives him illusions.
Yeah. Just temporary, please.
Actually, before I forget, there's a very keen supporter of the podcast called Marek Krauss, who is his 60th birthday today, and I sort of texted him this morning and said, I'm interviewing at the XTC this afternoon. And he said, tell Terry Chambers that his influence goes all the way across Europe. You know.
I thought you were going to say, tell Terry Chambers, yeah, well, you know, that wouldn't have come as a surprise at all.
Happy birthday to you, Matt. Happy birthday.
Marek. Happy birthday, Marek.
Happy birthday, Marek.
You know.
He'll be delighted about that.
No,
I'm only temporary.
One of the questions everybody asks me, and I've already had a little insight by watching your sound check, but
and you're still here?
And I'm still here.
Remarkable.
You've only got two points left. the other Steve left, you decided to be continuous as a three piece.
We didn't have a chance. We didn't have a choice.
At that point, yeah.
We are thinking of having him back just to even the two Terrys to the two Steves. Because that's going to be so confusing.
Yeah, and then there must be, what could you become, like ABBA? ABBA?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, we should go back to the original band name. It was 3 letters in the alphabet. But we're not allowed to do that because of, obviously, it's misleading.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the classic bands, I was just thinking about them, the Jam, the Who, whatever, with three musicians, you can get away with it, and it's surprising what you can do, but a bit daunting, I would have thought.
Well, I mean, the police, excellent. Jimi Hendrix, Robin Trower, there's lots of outfits that have been
Budgie.
A three-piece thing. They're sort of power trios, aren't they?
Yeah.
And I've always wanted to play in a rock band anyway, so by the other guy leaving, it's enabled us to do that.
It has, yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, it was a bit scary at first. I have to say, it was daunting. We were sort of left in it. We had a sell-out show in Evanston in Chicago the next morning.
Really?
Yeah. So it was like, how are we going to do this? So I sat in the back of the van and it was like, see if I can work this out. And yeah, it was very daunting, but it went really well. And we've stayed like it. And we've had our things, haven't we, where we said, should we got a, like, it'd be great to get another member. This is for me, me personally. But I'm at a point now where I'm fine with it now.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You know, another person, we get on, well, I'd say extremely well. I mean, they'd probably differ that, but, you know, and getting somebody else, another person in the band, you've got to get somebody as crazy as these people in order to, and you know, it's taken me 40 years to find these two. So, you know, picking somebody else up before my career is completely ruined. It's probably highly unlikely. So I think I'm trying to convince these pair that let's just sort of leave it with three snouts in the trough for the time being. I mean, nobody's ever said anything, oh, there's no keyboards in this, you know, because when what we do with these songs is our interpretation of these songs. We try and keep as close to these things as we can. And obviously with the later XTC stuff, you know, they were heavily, you know, overlaid with vocals and keyboard stuff and one thing and another, so we sort of steer pretty well clear of that, so that, you know, we don't think, oh, it's almost impossible to play some of this stuff. I mean, we're originally with four pieces in the band. We played King for a Day, for example, but there's an intricate sort of two part guitar thing there that is almost impossible.
It adds
another limb to him playing it, so there's certain things here that we don't touch, really, isn't it, Steve?
Yeah, you've got to be careful.
And so, all those kind of dueling guitars you would have on Black Sea and all of that kind of stuff, you obviously just can't do that.
Well, you'd be surprised.
You'd deal with yourself.
Honestly, you're going to be astonished by what you witnessed tonight.
That's what it stays.
Smoke and mirrors can do wonders these days.
There's tracks that I've sort of looked at and thought, oh my God, how am I going to get around this? Do you know what I mean? But it's worked out surprisingly well. So, for example, Rocket from a Bottle. I thought, oh no, just the guitar solo alone is, I just want to run away screaming, you know? But it's worked out great.
Yeah, great.
Really has worked out. So there's no complaints here.
Yeah, and I guess the difference between those other bands we just mentioned, The Police and all of those, is that they were always a three-piece.
And wrote accordingly.
So you've got, you know, an audience that might expect one thing, but you're finding something else in the music.
I mean, that's a good point, actually, because Partridge actually sort of went on and wrote songs there where he thought, well, I don't have to play this anymore because I'm not doing the live thing. So, you know, he's made it very difficult for us, actually.
And that was that day.
you swine.
And that was true when there was four of you, so there was no difference in that sense.
Exactly, you know, he felt restricted in a sense. I think I remember him saying that himself, restricted by the fact that I can write these songs, so we have to sort of do them justice in a live environment. Well, as soon as when he packed up, clearly, he didn't have to do that, so he just sort of threw the kitchen sink at some of this stuff. And we do sort of a bare bones interpretation of it in a three-piece scale. I mean, I likened it, I've said it before, but, you know, if you've got an apple pie, you know, and then you put custard on it, you put ice cream on it, and you put maple syrup on it, at the end of the day, you can't taste the apple. To a certain degree, I think that sort of works on musical terms. Sooner or later, I mean, you take bands like Free. You know, we were monkeying around with some of their stuff or some other stuff in the sound check just to relieve the boredom
more than
anything else. But, you know, the sound of Free, for example, you know, it's a three-piece band, you know, and there's plenty of space. And, you know, it didn't get sort of awash with bloody keyboards and, you know, violins and all the rest, strings and all the rest of the stuff, which, you know, I can understand that, but obviously as a three-piece band, you know.
It's got its pros and cons. For us, if you want a band to replicate XTC, you're going to need seven members.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You are. You know, that's just the way
it is. Well, even they did, didn't they? When they did King for a Day live on Letterman show.
Another band behind them.
So we've got to cut our cloth. Yeah, we cut our cloth accordingly. And the one thing that I don't like to see, and I'm not decrying it, I'm not saying it whether it's good or it's bad, it's just me personally. I don't like using click tracks, and I don't like using recorded backing, and you've got to have your in-ears, and you've got to run to these things, because that's not you, is it? So this way, it's warts and all, it's real.
Yeah, yeah.
And that sort of puts a smile on my face, and I'm sure it puts a smile on yours.
We're probably closer to Dr. Feelgood than anybody else.
We probably need a doctor.
Which we played with years ago. You know, it's just genuine sort of rock band stuff. You know, I think technology these days can, I don't know, you can get yourself in a world of trouble. I mean, arguably, we were playing sort of like the club pub circuit, you know. And sometimes the conditions are not always ideal. And the more complex your arrangement sort of technically is, can get you in an awful lot of danger and trouble when things go wrong. So, you know, we're pretty simplistic in our setup in order to sort of make sure that, you know, we can... sorry about
food's arrived. No, that's good.
I feel a bit that's like good. Rick Wakeman, actually. I'm going to have a curry during the middle of all this.
I'll see if I can find him for you.
It's good to know that you're going to be fueled through the gig tonight. No, not at all.
So have you noticed we are a three-piece, but we only have one meal, and we have to sit
and watch Terry.
Three sets of cutlery.
There he is, look.
If anybody's listening, this is the reality. We're having a chat to you, Mark, and the door opens and a plate of food comes in.
Yeah,
and Chambers is eating his thing because it's 5:30. And we're playing at 8, and I need to digest this tackle before indigestion sets in.
Yeah, given this is an oral podcast, maybe we should just describe the scene. We are, of course, in a vast acreage of luxurious.
Is it nice?
We're actually sat in the changing toilets. It's a very small room.
This is the life you've signed up to.
There's no pork here.
Yeah, there's no pork.
Where's the pork?
It's in them balls.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Well, I feel sorry for the pork.
Pork balls.
Well, yeah. You can get a food review at the same time as everything else. That's good.
Absolutely.
One of the Terry who's not eating, I'm interested to know...
Smoking.
Well, what your background, you go way back with Steve.
Yeah, years ago, back in the late 70s, wasn't it?
Well, it was when mammoths were alive.
Yeah. Well, woolly mammoths.
And you invented rock and roll between the two of you.
While carving spears.
And then they used to be in a band called the Crickets.
And then we moved apart and I became a Beatle.
Mm-hmm.
Basically because I'm left-handed and they said, do you want to do this job? There's lots of money. Yes, please.
And then,
Steve in a pub.
You were Paul McCartney, and which of the variants of Beatle cover bands were you in?
Many. Bad Beatles, the Beatles Celebration, with the Beatles, Beatles for Sale. Beatles with a Z at the end. I know them all, but I haven't played loads. Anyone that wants me, I'm like a prostitute.
Yeah.
And there's an interesting connection because lots of XTC fans, particularly from the latter part, who sort of got into XTC in the latter part of their career, are huge Beatles fans
because of
melody, because of
interesting
songwriter structure,
that's
whatever.
That's why we got him in the band, actually. We thought he'd be an attraction.
People become
distracted.
It didn't matter about his bass playing.
Well, you could see that.
How wrong can you be?
But do you make a connection between the music, XTC's music, and the
Beatles?
Well,
I was a fan from day one. Uh-huh. So I was a big vinyl. That's all we had back then, was vinyl, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. And I bought the first EP. Was it an EP came out first?
Yeah,
it was Science Friction.
Yeah,
I bought that immediately. Told Steve how good it was. He told me to go and take a run and jump in the lake.
I didn't dislike it.
But you were into
things like Colosseum 2 and Zeppelin and Winged on Rock. So I got him forcing this odd band called XTC down my throat every 5 minutes. And it took me a while, didn't it?
Yeah, it did, but then when the Black Sea album came out, he was like a converted, wasn't he?
Oh, that done me. Yeah, that was it.
Well, you had them drums, that was
done like a kipper.
Yeah.
You know. Apart from the fact, for me, that really floated my boat, and it was so out there, and it was so on its own. And the drum sound just freaked me out. And, you know, with running the risk of Chambers choking, he went straight in my top 10 of drummers. You know, Steve Gadd all the way through the, even Brian Downey, and now you've got Terry Chambers. There's a lot of drummers that I really like, but he was in the top 10.
He's leather bound.
And the next minute,
we both had that feeling.
we're sat in the changing toilet talking to you with him.
It's very strange to be just sitting next to him, let alone being in the band.
Yeah, just watching him.
Very strange to be a fan from that moment and think, bloody hell.
And be extremely Chambers. Hungry just watching
and in some ways, it's odd that you haven't been in an XTC cover band before.
Well, are there any left? Are there any XTC bands?
Well, you are the one, I suppose, now. Well, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There aren't any.
Arguably.
Are there... Mm-hmm. How many
there's a few in America. There's one out in Australia, too.
That's right,
Scarecrow people, I think.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of things that occur in the United States. And
the Fossil Fools, I thought they were really good.
They were good, And the lot that Dave Gregory was in were... What were they?
Well, that was Teen Spirits. I mean, they did a few XTC songs, they were their own band, but they did do some XTC songs
in
Dave's band.
So it sounds, Terry, you didn't need any persuasion then to join this band.
No, definitely not.
Well, I did. He just said
I met Steve in a pub, and he went, "What are you doing now?" And I said, "Well, I'm still doing the Beatles." Oh, he said, "I might have had some job for you." I went, "Oh, well, I'm still up for it. I'm quite happy to leave the Beatles." And then it happened, and it's been brilliant ever since. I'm now the driver.
And do you make a connection between? It's just in your head. Is there a connection between the Beatles and the music you're playing tonight?
It's fantastic songs, catchy songs, brilliant harmonies. Mm-hmm. Harmonies are awesome, which is really odd because there's only two of us, isn't it?
But we're used to each other.
Wow. Yeah, because we've been singing together
forever. Yeah.
People do say we sing well, but it's not for me to say.
Yeah, but if they're deaf.
but you know what I mean. They say it, but you just go, "Oh yeah, thanks." Did you hear?
No, it was a strange thing. You know, I'm very comfortable in this now because we sort of know how each other works. So it's like an unspoken thing. If he starts singing, I know where he's going to go, and I don't know how that happens.
Yeah,
so I'll ping up there. But if I move, he'll move as well. But we don't look at each other. It just happens. And yeah, it sort of works well, doesn't it?
Yeah, 1 minute he's singing the high harmony. And I think, I've got to go and do the low one, which is like the Lennon one of the two. And then it dropped to the Lennon. I think, I've got to go up to the Mac a bit and do the high bit, the Colin Moulding bit.
And so, are you talking that'll change by the night, will it then?
It changes. It morphs constantly,
Yeah.
All of a sudden, we'll be doing something and he'll come up with something else that from... Because the strange thing about XTC music, is the more you listen to it and you start to study it, you start to realise how much you haven't actually heard it properly. You've heard it, but you haven't listened, is a good way of putting it. So I'm forever putting the tracks that we play now. I listen to them and think, I didn't hear that bit in there before. Oh, no.
And then
that's not going to do this.
And then you could play it for 2 or 3 years, I should imagine, and then think, bloody, I'm playing all this. This is totally wrong. Yeah. Where did I get this from?
Yeah. It's bizarre.
Very strange.
It is bizarre.
Because I suppose the music doesn't follow the conventional C, G, D...
Furthest thing from it. I mean, I don't know, but from what I can glean, Andy would try and find chords. So you've got, obviously, the bass, you've got the root of a chord somewhere, but Andy would try and find something around it that was completely different. So sometimes trying to find that... It can be a bit of a nightmare.
I was just watching in the sound check doing This Is Pop and remembering those weird chords. But they're so distinctive. They are,
you know. And a lot of people, you don't bother going on the internet because there's so many different versions and they're all supposed to be right. And I can tell you now, like 99% of them are wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I'm sure some of the stuff I do, which I feel is right and it sounds like it's right, if Andy was here now... He'd be slapping me about saying, "That's the wrong chord." You know what I mean? We'll see. But, you know, yeah, it does morph, you know.
And from the bass point of view, talk about Colin Moulding. What's Colin Moulding like as a bass player when once you've got on that sort of granular level that you're now effectively studying him?
In my opinion, he's right at the top. I didn't think so when I was a nipper. Mm-hmm. I just thought he's great, great songwriter, great bass player. But when you try and play what he's playing, it's, my God, the man was a genius.
Yeah,
great,
absolutely. You had a whole band,
and to try and play some of it and sing is ridiculous.
Yeah.
They all played brilliantly.
Yeah,
they all brought their thing. You know, Terry with his drum style, Andy with his chord and his vocal, his chords and his vocals, and his progressions. Even, you know, you think that shouldn't work,
mm-hmm.
but it does. You know, every single one of them. Dave Gregory just shot up my guitarist list. Definitely.
Yeah,
definitely. Because I didn't chop that much notice, I'm so sorry. But I just didn't. That's just the honest truth until recently. And yeah, I've got favourite drummers and favourite guitar players. And Dave Gregory's right in that top ten, you know.
And again, like I think it's that thing that if you had the opportunity to take one track out of the mix, take out the guitar, take out the bass, you suddenly think, oh yeah, that bass, for example, is really important in,
in
songs where you didn't necessarily think that.
No, that's right. Once you start trying to get your own little part together and then you listen, it becomes a totally different game then, totally.
Well, I'm just expecting my dessert to come through the door, sorry.
Just I've got the belter in there. So how was the meal?
Very good.
Good.
Very good. That's the best meal I've had since we've been up here. We've been eating some relish up until
we didn't have one. Time.
I'm so happy you told me that I haven't got one.
Ah. But you should have ordered it for 5:30 like I did. If I've got the opportunity to do it, it's like everything else, you've got to eat while you can. This is a life on the road for you.
Well, either that or 10:30 or something crazy.
Well, exactly. And I mean, you can't eat that at 10:30, it'd be bloody cold, wouldn't it? You know.
So, it's non-stop. Mark.
Yeah, sometimes you just don't get the opportunity, but
don't get a chance to breathe. Sometimes.
Me not complain.
I was thinking, Terry C, that here you are playing this sort of level gig that in a way that you would have been doing in the late 70s, and I'm just wondering how different it does feel. I mean,
it's like going back to the egg, really. It's sort of being born, and then you suddenly your sort of life turn full circle. But I've always loved playing live, and despite the ups and downs of what can go wrong, miserable weather, loading in the wet and all that sort of business, it's at the end of the night, it's the reaction of the people that make me do it, really. It's the satisfaction of seeing people there, grown men cry. And,
that's true as well, that's
just your bandmates.
That's right. So there's two ways of taking that. But that's the reward for me. It's going out and living life and being fortunate to be able to do that. I'm privileged to be able to do it at my age after a long hiatus out of this. And it's just great fun. And I think, in a sense, I've missed it for, like you wouldn't believe.
Without realising you've missed it.
Exactly. It's not until you sort of get... It's like a blood in the water to me. It's like, I want to continue doing this for as long as I'm capable of doing it, as long as people are turning up and prepared to listen to them.
And now you've had, since the last time we spoke, that you've had a lot of experience on the road in America, and now on the road in the UK and America and so on. Do you think you're getting... more match fit than you were, but you're getting tighter as a band or whatever.
I mean, this is the idea of doing this tour, I think, is to prepare us really for a longer tour in the United States. And obviously, you know, to do, some people consider 8 gigs, which we're doing at the moment in the UK, a tour. I mean, you know yourself that XTC would, the original band anyway, I mean, we did 56 gigs in 60 days or something.
8 gigs in a night, didn't
we? That's sort of like, you know, arguably what I call touring. To me, anything less than 25 gigs is not a tour. But, you know, I'm a dinosaur, so... You know. But, you know, people sort of consider it, as I say, eight gigs in the UK is a tour.
Terry Dattle,
yeah.
I see where you went there.
He's good.
He's good, but it's not right.
See what you
know, he's in the band for his entertainment value. until he actually starts playing. I'm laughing at my own jokes. How bad's that? Yeah, self praise is no recommendation. No, he's a good lad.
But how has it been for all of you? Like, many bass Terry? How many gigs have you played with the band?
I don't know, I'm trying to count.
We lose, don't we?
Five or six. Nine, I think.
See, we don't even know.
So it's all new to you from that point of view, really?
Oh, yes, totally new, yeah. Every day I'm making mistakes and he punishes me, and the grown man crying is me after he's normally punched me after all the time.
Rubbish!
I know, but you don't have to tell me.
And Steve doing those big tours of America, about what, for a musician, it must just be... a great opportunity to just hone your craft on night after night after night.
Well, I think it's any musician wants to play America and they want to play Japan.
Mm-hmm.
You never think you're going to do it. But it's that dream, isn't it? I don't know why. Why America? Why Japan? Why not Australia? I don't know. And actually doing it, and it came to fruition. It was a bit of a daunting prospect. I thought, well, it's here now. It's on the doorstep. I've got to go and do this. But the audiences, they just knock your legs out from under you because they are so vociferous. And they turn up in their droves and they just love it up. It's a different scene from England, America, and Japan was even more so. They were just great.
Mm-hmm.
That worried me. That out of all of it, that worried me the most because I thought, I don't know why I thought it. Maybe I'd heard it somewhere that they sit down and they're very polite and they'd be like, little bit of clap and that's it, and they're very, you know, honourable and all this type. And I'm thinking, how am I going to communicate with these people? I can't speak Japanese. I don't know how many of them speak English. Mate, they were nuts. Absolutely nuts. I did not believe it. So for me, it was, how else would I have done it without him? It's very rare that you get to tour America.
Yeah. And I just imagine the huge, I mean, you're doing quite big distances in the UK, but, you know, just already you've done, in the past few days, you've done Glasgow, Aberdeen, Edinburgh. But that's nothing compared to the distances in America.
No, well, you get used to it. I know it sounds odd, but, you know, we've had hours of travelling, haven't we? Yeah. We've done 2.5 hours after a gig to get part of the way there, up early in the morning, out of bed, washed, in the wagon, and you got another 5 hours to get to the gig, do the gig, and you do it again. And you'd think to yourself, why do you do this? And I think, I don't know, I must be nuts. But you get used to it.
And when I've seen you, as I've frequently seen you on Facebook, doing your fantastic sort of post-show reports, you seem, I sometimes wonder, oh, are you just doing the kind of spiel to encourage tickets on it, but you actually sound like you're genuinely moved and excited by the crowds that you're playing.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, for me, that is really, really is a big thing. Mm-hmm. I love people coming up. I love them saying hello. You know, you that way, for me, it feels like you've actually made a connection, and whether or not it's not XTC, but they're having a great time, so mm-hmm. you've done your job.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I do like answering people. I always have done. Because they're coming to the gigs and they're buying the tickets. And it would be very disingenuous of myself not to thank them for that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so it is genuine. I'm not just making it up, you know. I mean, 8 o'clock in the morning and I'm looking like, you know, all of the Elephant Man. And I'll have a chat. You know, it's fine. It doesn't bother me. And I like it. And I like it when they answer.
Yeah.
So it's all good.
Bass Terry.
Yeah.
I've had the weird experience, like seeing TC and I, for example, being in this room where, and you as well, you know, that being in this room where everybody else in the room knows every note of every song, and you believe that you're watching the world's most famous band. You believe that you're watching the Beatles, and then you have to remember that if you step outside, most people you bump into won't even know the name of the band, never mind what they were singing. But have you had a similar sort of experience of the sort of loyalty and dedication that those who are in on the secret?
Well, I don't think I really need to because I was.
You're in on the secret
anyway,
already.
So
yeah, yeah.
I was always. I put myself down because there's so much to learn. And it's just. You feel inadequate sitting next to him, especially when we're practicing. And
it's true.
That's the best thing about this man is he's the most honest, truthful man you could ever meet.
You don't know me.
I know.
He hasn't known us. He hasn't been here.
And people have been really nice to me so far, so I'm quite happy.
What's not to like?
Mm-hmm. I'm not Colin Moulding, but there you go.
What do you think about that, Terry? Other Terry, that sense of loyalty that people show to the band, that I'm one of the obsessives. It is obsessive,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, as I said to you earlier, there was a chap in Wolverhampton, and he said, I last saw you in 1981, and it was at the Lafayette in Wolverhampton. I remember the venue. He also said, reminded me of JB's in Dudley, and he said, I also went to Barbarella's in Birmingham. And I said, so what the hell are you doing here? Anyway, no, I didn't. I said, you know, it's incredible to think that. And he said, I was only 21 when all this was going on. So, you know, this guy's sort of like, this band has been part of his life for, you know, 40 years or whatever. I mean, it's, well, I mean, whoever thinks that's going to happen, you know, because the whole punk thing, I mean, if we can sort of call it that, sort of came and went within 5 years. You know, the majority of those bands have sort of gone and everyone's forgotten all about it. Yet this band, amongst others from that, a few others, I would argue, from that era, are still around and listened to, you know. I suppose we thought that probably might happen, that some will survive and others will just, you know, be one-hit wonders and disappear. But in fairness to Colin and Andy, they were good songwriters, mm-hmm. and those songs still sound pretty good to me today.
Yeah.
You know, where some songs can start to sound a little dated. It's like, sort of like, you can look at a house and sort of almost tell it was built in the 60s.
That's right.
You know, it's a little like that, but these songs still sound good.
My theory about that is that XTC were never fashionable, so they could never go out of fashion.
You're
or into fashion.
Right. This band were famous for having a trouser problem. fashion was one of those things. I mean, Virgin Records, for example, you could sort of get somebody to dress us up when we went on things like Top of the Pops or any of those, you know, Tiz Wars or any of those other TV shows that we were on at the time, to try and make us into, you know, a likeable sort of band in a sense, and fashionable, and you know, we were never trying to be Duran Duran or anything, or Spandau Ballet. You know, we were never. It wasn't about fashion for us. It was about all about the music, really. And I think as a result of that, we never really got sort of tangled up with a specific trend. We weren't modern romantic or whatever that thing that was that came
along. Romantic.
New romantic, yeah.
There was a band called Modern Romance, wasn't there?
Yeah, that type of thing. Yeah. So we weren't never fashionable. So in fact, that worked in our favour, I think, in long terms, because I'm not particularly embarrassed about the old photographs. I think, well, you know, it's of the time, but I'm not there with a kilt on. Mm-hmm, you know what I mean? Thinking, oh, this is the new fashion. Not that there's anything wrong with people wearing kilts, mine, but I just happened to bring that one out because we're in Scotland. But, and funnily enough, I haven't seen anybody wearing one up here either. But, you know, we never got sort of tangled up with, certain bands having certain hairstyles without getting too specific about it. And I think it looks bloody ridiculous.
It's all their image, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And did you not have any of that, like when you were, you know?
Well, you saw the band.
But you didn't. I'm just imagining, like when you were before I saw you, whether you had that ambition of being a rock star who would look like Mick Jagger and would look, you know, be the front man or whatever. Was it always about the?
I mean, the nearest
music?
We ever got to that was before. I think it was when we were in the very embryonic stages of XTC. Partridge sort of got us all to wear these boiler suits because we had such crappy clothes outside of that. And at least it was some sort of uniform that set us apart from being, you know, just in off the street type of thing, you know. And I think it's quite important that people on stage should look as if they deserve to be there, not part of the, you know, the whole grungy sort of thing. You know, I didn't think it seemed quite right somehow. But, you know, I mean, the Beatles, for example, he'll tell you, he still wears a suit now because he feels undressed without it.
Yeah.
And I'm perfectly comfortable with that. So what, you know, and Steve likes to just wear a shirt and I like to wear nothing. But they forced me to
that's another story, though.
They forced me to wear
that's
something
really
because
naked.
They've seen me naked and it's not a pretty sight. No, you know, but you don't want to get tangled up with fashion too much, I don't think, because as I say, like from a building point of view, you can say, well, that was built, you can tell it's got the 60s all over it, you know, it's all pebble dash and all this type of thing. So, and I think music to a certain extent from a fashion point of view is exactly that.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from David Bowie, of course.
Well, yeah, because that's what I'm thinking, because so much of the rock music world is associated with the look of it as well, and that is a whole big thing.
He was a trendsetter rather than a follower of fashion.
Yeah.
And I think that's extremely important.
Yeah. But you reminded me that the podcast that comes out tomorrow actually is with Ian Doser from the Hamsters from
Hell.
From Hamsters from Hell, Swindon band. And one of the things he said I thought was a really good insight. He said that if you come on, and this is a question for you, Steve, as the kind of front
get
man,
Chambers to give me that £5 that he owes me.
Actually, he said that you're the one member of XTC that he's never played with on in some form or other, so he's got you in his sights. There's an open invitation there if you want to be in there.
I was always last on the list.
So he was talking about that thing about when you come on stage, if you're looking down at your shoes, the audience will look down at their shoes. If you look out to the audience and go, wow, then the audience might do that
absolutely
as well.
Absolutely. Steve will tell you that, if you're not looking as if you're enjoying things up there and things are working for you, the reaction from the audience is likewise, isn't it? If you look like miserable, wish I wasn't here. The audience can draw on that. I mean, Steve's the man with the vocal microphone. You tell him, Steve, that how it works.
Well, yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, it's like anything. Terry's right. If you go out there and you just think to yourself, oh, do you know what? I can't be bothered tonight. They're going to know that. And it's not a spoken thing. It's a felt thing. When the audience, if they look at you, they know. If you're not on top form, or you just can't be bothered, or you're just going through the motions. And that's a really spooky thing. So we always try and keep on the top of our game, and I'm more than happy to go out there and do this. I mean, one, we're playing great songs, two, great drummer, three, I've got me mate playing bass, and what's not to like? So I'm going to hit that stage running. I ain't going to hit that stage crawling on the belly, you know? So... It is a thing.
And if you're feeling shy, if you're feeling modest, just forget about it. Just...
Oh, there's always terror.
Yeah.
Oh, there's always terror.
Yes, you're playing XTC songs.
Yeah.
It's terror from the moment you get on the stage.
Yes, it is.
Till you get off.
You do get hit by cotton mouth. I call it cotton mouth. Your mouth dries up and you think, right, here we go. Take that breath. Put your big boy pants on. Get out there and do it. But the audiences, mate, they just welcome. How can you? Glasgow, Aberdeen, tonight we're in Edinburgh. Glasgow and Aberdeen were great. I mean, there's smiling faces. How can you not get off on that, you know? So you sort of reciprocate, and then it's just this ball that rolls, and it's like growing more moss and all that kind of thing, you know? And the audiences, I bounce off the audience. The more they're at it, the more they get me at it. Mm-hmm. So I've got to actually reel my neck in now and again, because I just have a chat with them for 3 hours. Do you know what I mean? Yes, it's good.
And you must have studied like the early days of the Beatles. They you know, all of their time in Hamburg, they learned how to be an entertaining band,
definitely.
Showmen.
This is totally different, though, because with the Beatles, you've got real... I haven't found any XTC anorak people yet that really, because they didn't have an image, which is the thing with the Beatles. It was all image, so you could turn up to do a gig as a Paul McCartney tribute, and there would be fans out there saying he never used that guitar when he did that song
with those trousers.
And he just went, can't we just, you know. It's music. I'm not
picking up. Past that.
You don't get that in XTC.
He's never signed autographs. He's the one who signed
Paul McCartney. Yes.
I mean,
that's really weird.
So I used to sign Tool McCartney. Yeah, it's very strange.
Because he's a tall lad. He's about 6'6".
So you're now on that circuit. There's quite a few bands out there who are on that sort of nostalgia circuit, so you can play in those big festivals. With the one in the Isle of Wight you played once, and where you've got all of those sort of 80s bands and so on, and yet this, you've got this really interesting mix that you're trying to do something interesting musically as well. You're not just apart from anything else, XTC were never that big in the first place. So it's a different sort of market, isn't it? So it's an intelligent audience that knows the stuff, but you're playing to them. And is that, how do you see the band progressing over the coming tour? And are you trying to get bigger and bigger as you go along? Is there a sort of...
No, I don't think so. Because of our age, I guess, it's a majority of people who are between the ages of sort of 45 and 70-ish, I suppose. I don't see us sort of like working towards stadiums. I think where we are at this point is probably
working towards care homes.
Yeah, Yeah, I don't know. I haven't really thought about beyond the end of this year, to be honest. We've got
gigs. Now he tells me.
So, you know, I don't know. I mean, once we sort of finish doing this touring, I suppose we'll decide what
steps next.
Yeah, I think their intentions are to try and do some original stuff. But once again, Terry's, you know, part of this revolving door thing. So, I mean, we want to sort of, hopefully we're settled with the lineup we've got now, and we can work forward and work on some of our original material, I think, and just throw that out there and see what sort of, whether it gets taken on by XTC fans and Beatles fans and whatever.
And actually, that reminds me as well, I haven't asked you about the set list. You were playing Reel by Reel before, weren't you?
And I
don't think I've seen you play that before. Are the songs that you're adding in?
This is about the second time we've been back to Scotland since we've been doing this. And it's important to sort of keep freshening it up, because otherwise if people can come back and say, oh, they played that rubbish last time.
It's funny because we've got some festivals and they're sort of like that pop 80s thing, you know, so there's four of them. We did an 80s cruise. That was eye-opening.
Yeah, but it was.
In America, so we went from LA down to Mexico.
Just doing one gig a day, or how does that work?
Two gigs in a week.
Nice. Oh, yeah, I did the cruises. One gig a week.
Yeah.
And got paid nicely for it.
Yes.
Yeah. But it's a strange thing. It seems to be a thing now.
Yeah.
But we're not angling for that. I mean, if it comes, we're not going to turn it down, I guess, are we? Do you know what I mean? Work's work, and we do what we do. We work, but it's still going. There seems to be a lot of
that. Presumably that crowd you don't do Reel by Reel for, you, but you would do
Nigel.
Yeah. You're not moderating the set according to
it's
the...
It's most of the sort of hits,
I mean, when we were booked to do these four festivals in the UK that we're doing this summer, I said, well, look, how long do you want us to play for? I mean, what sort of, you know, what are we looking at? Two sets, one set, an hour or whatever? He said, no, I'll just play the hits. I said, well, we can only do that in 3 minutes.
What was a hit?
Damn, they didn't play it.
Yeah. I mean, it's difficult, really, you know. Sometimes you come off and say, oh, I wish they'd have played so-and-so.
Yeah, I just wondered if it was going to get cold.
Thank you, Terry. Terry and Steve, thank you very much for that.
Unfortunately,
sorry for keeping you from your food.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry. Thanks, man.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Well, Terry's eating it. You carry on.
Yeah.
Is all that sort of I mean, I wouldn't know where to begin, all that sort of stuff, but finding the promoters, finding the whole infrastructure.
We reached out when we started this thing to agencies to see whether they would be interested in doing this type of thing. I mean, this agency that we were doing this next sort of part of the tour with, Rock Islands Management, they are called, and, you know, we're not really with any particular agency. We just sort of we threw it all out there and said, look, this is the band, this is what we do, you know, because they sort of take care of From the Jam and several other skits and a few other bands of our generation.
Yeah.
Those bands are doing similar sort of venues to this, so it was sort of a natural sort of progression, I suppose, as regards getting these gigs.
And it makes economic sense, does it? Is it possible to be a working band these days?
Well, yeah. I mean, the thing is, it's about selling merchandise these days. I mean, this is a big thing, and we've got some merch going out there. And in the United States, it's crazy. Those people will buy anything over there. I mean, I don't mean that in a disrespectful sense. It's just that the British people are a little bit more, a little bit more careful, I guess. And, you know, but it's certainly worth selling merchandise in this country. And which is something that when we originally, the original XTC tour, I mean, there may have been a program or something that just sort of said, you know, what my favourite colour is and, what my date of birth is and all this sort of stuff.
The very first issue of Limelight, my fanzine, came out in 1982, and I had these visions of them, you know, of selling 1,000 copies a night in each of these venues, because you were playing quite big places at the time. And then, of course, he stopped playing. And so I ended up selling, 500 copies over 5 years or something.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. But today, it seems to be, people are arguably making more money playing in the live environment than they are making, nobody signs a record deal these days, do they?
No.
It's sort of downloads in Spotify and all this sort of nonsense. And you don't get any money for that.
No, pennies, not even pennies.
I don't know where the airtime of music in the music business is going, to be quite honest. Mm-hmm. This is bad enough in as much that venues are closing or pubs are closing throughout the country by the week.
Yeah.
It's quite disturbing, really, to think that I don't know where young kids are going to get the opportunity to sort of play. I mean, I've said before, we'd be more than happy for a bunch of 17, 18-year-old kids come on and play something and actually have the opportunity to do it rather than having another bloody old fossilised support band going on. Mm-hmm. Because, and this is why we do two sets, there's two reasons for it. One is so that we don't have to move any gear around, particularly on a small stage and everything gets all bloody buggered up. And also it gives us the opportunity to play more songs.
Yeah.
Whereas even in the old days, we only used to play about an hour and 5 minutes or something because it was full on. It was, thrash stuff. And we don't, we're older now and we've sort of pace the set accordingly, so we do two sort of sets now that are arguably they're over 50 minutes long anyway. We can do 2 1-hour sets if need be, but I think it's necessary in order to sort of like try and cover the catalogue of songs. As I say, we're trying to do some from nearly all the albums, and the only one we don't touch is Go To, and I don't know exactly why that is, but that's just the way it sort of turned out, mm-hmm. because there seems to be sufficient material there of good stuff, and you do have to leave some stuff out. But as you said earlier, we are sort of trying to freshen the setup so that people will say, well, they played that last time, they played that, and that was exactly, people get the running order now and say, so we're trying to freshen the thing up.
Especially songs that you did used to play back in the day as well, that there's loads of stuff from those first
arguably we're playing some of the songs there that even XTC didn't play, and certainly the ones that they recorded after I left the band, none of those songs really played live. Mm-hmm. Tall boy band, other than the fact that I did that thing with Colin, the TCI thing that you came to
every night
when we did a few gigs, but once again, I mean, this really is the result of that project coming to an end. I thought I put a lot of time and effort into that, into get back into a playing situation after a long period of time. And I thought, well, I've put a lot of work in it. It seems a shame not to sort of continue on, because the reaction to that TCI thing, I thought, was very favourable.
Was?
I thought, as I said to you earlier, I thought there was blood in the water and I smelled it. Mm-hmm. I thought, I'm enjoying this. And this is where we are now.
Yeah. And would you say you've become a fan of the songs or the albums that you didn't play on?
There's some great songs here, There's some fantastic songs. It's difficult sort of treading in the footsteps of the likes of Pete Phipps, Dave Maddox, Pat Mustoletto, and all of them that they've used, Chuck Sabo. I've probably missed a few too, but they're great drummers, those guys, and I listen to that, I think, I couldn't play that, and I would have probably had to do another interpretation of it. And I think if there are any of those songs being played tonight, which they will be, I sort of do put my sort of stamp on it, because either of an inability to be able to perform correctly to the original stuff that these guys did, but as I say, it's a version that we do that I think is okay in a rock sense, and obviously it's with guitar and bass.
I think that's what I was thinking the last time I saw you here in Edinburgh, was a sense because it sort of creates a thing of this is all the band's music in one helping.
Yeah.
And it sort of takes it out of the different eras and the different albums or whatever. It's one band playing them all.
Yeah.
And it sort of foregrounds the song, the brilliance of the songwriting. It's just like this is the XTC songbook, and you're hearing really good songs. Catalog,
because I think it's important to do that, because somebody will be disappointed. We have been approached by promoters to say, look, we've got this idea, just go out there and do sort of the whole white music album and that. And I think I don't really want to do that, because somebody's just saying, well, they never played Begging Plans for Nigel, you know?
Yeah.
It's insane. And I said, you know, we're not going to go out there and do The Wall, you know, as a Pink Floyd thing, you know, it's like a concept.
But you also, I think you would also need the original, I mean, all of the original members, or at least three quarters of them.
You want Barry Andrews' keyboards and for doing those things. I mean, if we were going to do things like Fireball, Exile, Spy, how the hell are you going to do that as a three-piece band? So it's all right for these promoters, they just see it like that. They don't see it from a musical point of view, thinking, we want to play these songs and give these songs justice, and we don't want people going away thinking, well, that was a pretty ordinary version of that, you know. But
if you're doing the album, it has to sound like the album, doesn't it? So you want it to, like, note for note perfect. And
yeah, that's right. I mean, I just thought it was sort of like pigeonholing yourself there and doing that. So, you know, and then people say, well, the next tour is obviously going to be all the go-to stuff, you know what I mean? And if people didn't buy that and didn't like it, they're not going to go to the show. So I think, you know, we have to play. You've got to play the hits, you know.
I'm thinking of the very, very early, even pre-signed days of XTC, Healing Kids, all the rest of it. That would have been the last time that you were playing covers of other, you know, playing what other drummers played. And you didn't do even that much, did you? You've always an original band.
No, I mean, to Andy's, I can never remember a time when we didn't play Neon Shuffle, for example. Yeah. I mean, you know, and Saturn Boy was another song that never, ever made it. I mean, Partridge was writing songs from an early age, but and the only reason we did the cover stuff, we did, I can't remember what they were now, but they were sort of a couple of zombies things, I think. And I mean, Partridge was quite selective about what he wanted to sing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was what he was capable of singing, because he didn't have a voice like sort of Engelbert Humperdinck, so we weren't doing any of that stuff. But you had to do some sort of covers there in order to get any gigs at all, because we were a bunch of no-names. And, a lot of bands are in a similar situation to that now, playing the working men's clubs type of thing, and they want to hear, you know, Madonna songs or something like Snoop Dogg or something, I mean, everybody's sort of more or less obliged to start like that. I mean, Alex Harvey was doing a Tommy Steele imitation type of thing when he first started, you know, so everybody sort of starts like that, doing show bands and what have you. But we made a natural progression, and obviously Partridge's, the shackles were off once he finished playing live. And as I say, a lot of those songs were, you know, to do them justice, you probably need seven people on stage, you know. So we do the ones that we think we can do justice to.
And on that bombshell, thank you very much, Terry Chambers.
Not at all, Mark. It's been a pleasure, as always.
As always, yes. So we'll get you on for the fourth time fairly soon.
What do you call that noise?
Thank you so much, Terry Chambers, Steve Hampton, and Terry Lyons, for taking time out to talk to me and giving us such a fantastic night. I do recommend you catch them on tour if you have the chance. Thanks too to Felix von Boxberg for the music, and to you for listening. If you'd like to hear more of this kind of thing, please pop along to patreon.com/MarkFisher and show your support. Thanks in particular to the following knights in shining armor: Terry Arnott, Kevin Burt, Lorenzo Charchi, Cale Corbett, Liam Duggan, Jamie Dunn, Jeff Farris, Evan Fish, Leslie Gooch, Mike Grafe, Robert Graham, Camille Henry, Stephen Hope, Alan Hughes, Merrick Krause, Jesper Kumberg, Robert Lawlaw, Liz Lynch, Murray Meikle, Yusef Murrah, Amy Parkinson, Mark Reed, James Reimer, Michael Sutcliffe, Steve Swift, Mark Thomas, Nigel Waller, John Wedemeyer, Lucy Verbitsky, and Martin Whitley. That's all for now. See you next time.